to musician Wilder Scott, the town of Tulliver holds magic. It was that magic that helped to create him, and it is that magic that he is trying to capture once more. But not all magic is good magic. When Private Investigator Alan Flynn is hired to find the missing musician, he finds himself caught inside a world of death, a cursed town, and a mystery that threatens to kill anyone who stumbles upon it. The town of Tulliver holds a dark secret. It is a secret that has haunted its people for years. It is a secret that lives in the shadows. And it is a secret that wants out. This is Lyric the Novel. From award-winning author Jason Emmett comes a horror novel in the vein of Richard Matheson, Stephen King, and Peter Straub. Join us each week as the chilling story unfolds in this horror audiobook podcast novel. With a song, fear will be written, and through the lyric, darkness will be set free. Lyric the Novel, available now wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, tapeworms. Are you guys as in love with geek culture as I am? Sci-fi, I mean like Star Wars, Harry Potter, Star Trek, D&D, video game inspired clothing and apparel? Well, we are here to help you get it. This stuff is fun as hell, and you're going to see something you want, I guarantee it. Here's what you do. You go over to BustedTees.com. BustedTees, that's T-E-E-S as in t-shirts, .com. Shop all their amazing stuff. Grab a hat, grab some socks, grab a shirt, whatever. Then at checkout, you enter our code, which I will give you. So take note right now. Our code is Jason25945. That is my name, Jason, and the number 25945. Do that for 20% off all your geek attire. Go over to BustedTees.com and be awesome. That's BustedTees.com. Designs that pop culture. What's up, gang? Jason Emmett here, and we're about to give you our social media information with a quickness so that you can contact us and be a part of the show. First, we have a website, themixtapeshow.com. Head over there, find out all the good stuff you want, links to everything, interviews, playlists, places you can leave us a review. It's all there on the website, including direct links to our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, and YouTube. We also have a phone number, and you can leave us a voicemail. You should leave us a voicemail. That number is 513-437-2377. Easiest way to remember it, 513-HERAD-77. Hey, if you've been listening to the show for a while, I don't know if you're listening through iTunes or Pandora or Spotify, it doesn't really matter. If you could take like 30 seconds, click that little review bar, we would greatly appreciate it. We love you, so please, it helps.
Please share the show with your friends. We would greatly appreciate that as well.
And that's it. That's all I'm giving you right now. We're going to go ahead and kick into this week's episode.
We love you.
I want it that way.
Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a heart.
We'll just do the whole song.
Tell me why.
I think you know exactly why.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Who has a mixtape?
We do.
Who needs a mixtape?
You do.
Who makes a mixtape?
We do.
Who needs a mixtape?
You do.
But you need to go.
Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Raise the roof and the moon feet. Come along and laugh with our mixtape.
Ha 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 ha.
Waka 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 waka. Don't you wanna listen to our mixtape? Sing along and clap to the beat. Settle in and listen to our mixtape. And other music vanishes. Enjoy your bottom sandwiches.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome back to another fun-filled and exciting edition of the Mixtape Podcast. I'm Jason Emmett.
I'm Casey Masterpiece.
I'm Twisted Kid Matt.
And I'm the one and only Stuart.
Chewy D, because he's chewing gum all the time.
Chewy D. Oh, not that Chewy? Okay.
Chewy D.
No, not Chewbacca.
No.
Chewbacca D.
That was pretty good. He dragged a chair. I don't know how he knew it sounded like Chewbacca.
But we did it last week.
That's classic. You know, it's funny. So we call him Stewie. It's short for Stewbacca. Wouldn't it be great if your name was really Stewbacca? Stewbacca Diamond. Stewbacca. That's what I'm going to call you from now on. Stewbacca. So last week we did our Christmas episode, and this week what we're going to be doing is decade theme songs. I don't know how else to put it. Basically what we did is we took the three decades we talk about, which is the 80s, the 90s, and the first decade of the 2000s, and I put it out to all the guys. I want you to pick one song, and it's, you know, that's difficult, that you think either defines that decade or could be like a theme song of that decade. It has to, like, what is a song that just pertain, like, that is all about that decade?
This is a certain decade.
Yeah. And each person picked. And this is your choices. So here's the thing that I'm going to say this week. The notes, for the most part, are going to be smaller, because what I want this week is more you guys talking about why you think that we'll have a discussion about the songs, why you think these songs are more like, what made you think this was a defining song of that decade?
That's a lot of pressure on a song.
It's not pressure. it's literally just opinion. It's fine. One of Stewie's pick. I have a little bit more notes than most of the others, because it's kind of fascinating to talk about, but for the most part, we're not doing a lot of notes this week. I'm going to give you some basics, and then I want to have some discussion. All of us talk about, or let the person say why they thought this was kind of a defining or theme song, and then the rest of us kind of give our thoughts. We're going to start with Kevin. We're going to start with Kevin's pick this week. And I want you guys to know, when you turned your songs in, some of them, I don't want to say this exactly.
Any spiteful picks on this one?
Yeah, any angry picks? Some of them I get to, like, I see where they're going with this. I see where they're going, or I think I see where they're going, and I'm kind of curious if I was right. Like, did they pick it because of this? Some of them I'm like, I'm not exactly sure. I get that it is a song of this decade, but I'm not sure why they are picking it. So I'm really interested to hear what everybody has to say. This first song on KC's list is one of those where, yeah, it's very much for an 80s song. I'm just curious why you, what made you pick this as like a defining or theme song. So here is Kevin's first pick. This is Duran Duran, Hungry Like the Wolf, off their 82 album Carnival. Guitarist Andy Taylor told Blender Magazine, that track came from fiddling with new technology that was starting to come in. Bassist John Taylor has said he doesn't really know what the lyrics mean, speculating that the song is probably about meeting girls and or wanting to have sex with somebody. The song went gold in Canada, where it hit number one. It was 5 in Australia, 5 in the UK, where it went platinum. And in the U.S., it went gold, hit number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. All right, Kev, you picked Hungry Like a Wolf by Duran Duran as your 80s theme or defining song. Why? What made you go with this song first?
Something about this song that just, screams 80s.
I mean, it's
it was everywhere in the 80s. And, you know, plus, you know, it's got a nice beat that you dance to. has that feeling of 1985. I could still reminisce the video. I could smell the common breeze in the air. And that's all I
could smell Aquanet.
Yeah, I could smell Aquanet.
I could smell the ozone just depleting.
So I like that in the notes of the song, it's mentioned, you know, this was a new technology. They were really playing around with some very 80s technology to get that like synth sound.
Yeah.
So it's definitely heavy on the synth. Duran Duran, while a band that is still around and were heavy in the 90s, are very much an 80s band as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I can kind of see where you're going with this one.
What do you guys think, though, as a as an 80s defining song, like one of the defining songs of the 80s? Would you, obviously not your guys' picks, but like that's something I want to get, like, ask you guys as we go over each song. Would, I mean, you include this on a
it's definitely it sounds like the 80s,
yes,
for sure. Yeah. I mean, you got the, like you said, the synth and everything and the poppy sound, so yeah, that, yeah, definitely,
yeah. Matt, what do you
sounds
think?
Sounds like would Miami Vice.
There you,
yeah,
go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Miami Vice.
Yep. I just want to thank you for not putting, look, I like Duran Duran. Thank you for not putting Rio, because I have gone on record. I do not like the song Rio, and I get
really?
A lot of, oh,
I,
yeah,
actually like it.
I don't like Rio, and I don't know why. Oh, it drives my wife crazy, but I'm like, I don't like Rio. I just don't like it. I love Duran Duran, too. I love them. Don't, okay, like Rio. Don't like Rio at all. You should have put Notorious.
Notorious.
It's a good song. They had a lot of great songs in the 80s, and they were a huge and very influential 80s band. So I actually love 90s Duran Duran, though. It's actually
should
completely
we
change your sound in
they,
the 90s.
Totally, and I love their, yeah, stuff.
Should we do all our 80s at one shot? Or
I don't just know. Would you guys prefer to do that? Go.
I was kind of thinking that, okay, that's what we were going to do.
That makes sense.
We,
yeah,
can do that. All right. Yeah. Cool. So then we'll
easy
go
to compare them.
I like that idea. I hadn't thought of it. You guys just changed, yeah, the show on me, and that's all good.
I apologize. Sorry.
No, it's not going to be that difficult. It's all, okay, the same setup. I just got to move around on the notes, okay, a little bit. So, uh-huh, we're going to go into Matt's 80s pick next then. Right. And I want to see like where your guys' heads were at, because when we get to my list overall, I definitely had a certain feel or idea in my head. I'm curious if you guys did as well. But here is Matt's 80s pick.
Get away.
First of all, I just want to state how much I love Iran by Flock of Seagulls. It's such a fun, yeah, song.
It's the hair, dude. It's the hair. Yeah.
Give a little it bit is of background. The band and album are the same name, Flock of Seagulls by Flock of Seagulls. And it happened in 1982. We have actually talked about this song on the show before. Park Puderbaugh of Rolling Stone magazine said in his article, Anglomania, that's the word. shut up, sure. I can't
like
read
when he learns a new word live on the show.
Fuck you, man.
At the age of 47,
Anglomania, the second British invasion is the name of the article. He said, fronted by a singer synth player with a haircut stranger than anything you'd be likely to encounter in a month of poodle shows, A Flock of Seagulls struck gold with its first try. As far as what the song is about, singer Mike Score has stated they used to hang out at a club where another band played a song called Iran. And the lyric just, they used to go straight from the club to the rehearsal studio. And the lyric Iran just sort of stuck in his head. So they wrote a song. The songs aren't the same, but the lyric kind of got stuck in there. The second thing that he said influenced them was a poster of a man and woman running from a UFO that hung on the wall at Zoo Records, which is actually what they ended up using for the album cover. Number one in Australia, 26 in Canada, 43 in the UK, and number 9 on the Billboard Hot 100. Matt, what makes you think this is a defining 80s song?
Have you seen the video?
Yes. Look, man. Yeah. Like, just I'm just wanting you to
around on a turntable, holding one finger down on a keyboard, listen, with dual mohawks, listen, with the fucking devil lock from the Misfits in the front. Just
right.
I want to be very
neon lights.
I want to be very clear.
80s, just cheesiest video, but so good at the same time.
I want to be very clear. That's I why. Get why it's. You're just telling the audience. You're like, have you seen the video? Like, yes, I have. I get, yeah, it. I get it. No, you're right. I mean, the hair, the music video, the styling, the synthesizer. It's an 80s song, man.
Very, yeah, much so. It bleeds 80s.
It really does.
Yeah.
And we said,
you might have an 80s infection. it's the most 80s song of all time, in my opinion,
and
which is why it made my list.
Yeah.
You know what's
that's a new
saying. We said Duran Duran was an 80s band because the stuff they put out in the 80s was 80s. And like Kevin said, when they went to the 90s, they totally changed sound and they became a 90s band, and they, yeah, were fantastic. Flock of Seagulls is an 80s, they're an 80s band. They still tour, but they're an 80s band. That's what they do, is 80s. So, totally get it. I think we all agree that this could be on a defining 80s album.
It's the hair. It's definitely the
hair. Definitely helps. He's bald now.
Yeah, it's completely.
He looks like Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. It's so weird. Wait, no, really? He looks just.
He's actually coming into town at Lolo Garage.
You flock of seagulls.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so weird. He's totally bald now, and he looks a lot like Billy Corgan. It's bizarre.
I'm looking him up now.
Yeah.
If I remember right, he was actually a hairstylist at one point. Oh, yeah, he was bald. That's
and he looks like Billy Corgan.
In the picture that I saw, too, it kind of looked like he, I mean, not that it has anything to do with him, but it kind of looks like he's cross-eyed.
I don't know.
It may be just
so
a picture.
Actually, Flock of Seagulls, show. Just when they went defunct, he just actually started a new band called Smashing Pumpkins. He shaved it. All right, so this is, we're going to go into my list now, and this is the song I picked as my defining 80s song.
Slow change may pull us apart when a life gets in.
An immediate image pops into your head, too.
Don't you forget about me, 1985 from the Breastfist.
I love the Breastfist.
The Breastfist Club. This song's also very 80s. It might be my defining 80s song.
I'm kind of surprised you didn't put that in.
From a movie.
Is there a better defining 80s song for me? I think not, folks.
Yeah, just The Stroke by Billy Squire. Honorable mention.
Don't you forget about me, 85 from the Breakfast Club soundtrack. Written by musician Keith Forsey and Steve Schiff while they were doing the score for the film, actually. They said they were inspired by a scene where Judd Nelson and Anthony Michael Hall are talking, and the line, "Don't forget when you're back in classroom, you're not just a bad guy, and we've got other things in common." That is said in the movie, and they were inspired by that quote to write the song. We've talked about this song before, but a few people passed on the song. Brian Ferry passed on doing the song. He was actually just working on an album and he couldn't do it. Cy Kernan from The Fix turned the song down, as did Billy Idol. Yeah, it's really weird. I would kind of like to hear. I wonder why The Fix turned it down.
Could you imagine if Billy Idol did this?
It would kind of be cool, actually. Yeah,
I don't want to hear him do a version of it now.
Mm-hmm. So Simple Minds was approached and they hesitated, as it was not original material, and they were kind of like just breaking into the United States, and they were kind of like, we don't know if we should be doing, you know, stuff that isn't ours. But at the time, Chrissy Hynde was actually married to the singer, lead singer, Jim Kerr, I'm sorry. And she talked him into it, and it became their biggest hit. Number 6 in Australia, 1 in Canada, 7 in the UK, number 1 on the Billboard Hot 200. So why did I pick this as a defining song? This is really easy. The Breakfast Club is one of those classic 80s films that everybody knows. And with that, we all know the song. Everybody knows the song. And when I say everybody, I mean like everybody, not just people, Gen Xers. We're talking like everybody. I've seen a number of TV shows, The Goldbergs, Dawson's Creek, even a Nickelodeon show, Victorious. They've all done parodies. So it's still a thing. It's still like a real thing that happens, you know. It's just literally called Don't You Forget About Me, which kind of seems poignant to the 80s. Like, don't forget about us. Don't forget about this generation. Don't forget about this decade. So that's why I picked it. Matt, what do you think? What do you think of this song as being a defining song of the 80s?
Well, you know my penchant for songs from soundtracks. So
yes, we do.
Yeah. And like I said, when it started playing, I was like, you think of one thing when this song comes on, and it's The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. Judd Nelson walking and putting his fist up. It's iconic image that gets in every. Yeah. And when the Goldbergs did a version of this, which is funny because Anthony Michael Hall ended up on the Goldbergs, and they do version of this. And the last scene, like Adam's walking down the field and he goes to put his arm up and it's a whole thing. His mom's with him and it's goofy, but yes. So, yeah, absolutely. Stu, what do you think about this song being considered a defining song of the 80s?
Well, like you said, like as soon as you hear it come on, it's like you know what it is. Yeah. You know what it's from. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the movie is pretty awesome. So
yeah. It is, and it holds up, I think. I think it still holds up as a good movie.
It wasn't this band like a one-hit wonder?
Here in the States. Simple Minds, much bigger band in the UK than they were here. Yeah. Kev, what do you think?
I think it hits the nose, you know, perfectly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, definitely.
Square in the nose.
Right square in the damn nose. All right, so we're going to move to Stewie's pick for the 80s and his defining song from the 80s. Here you go.
Not what I expected, to be honest. that was great, guys.
Thank you. No practice. We just... this is Billie Jean, Michael Jackson, 1983. It was on some little album called Tiller? Oh, wait, no, maybe Thriller?
I believe it was pronounced Thriller.
Yeah. I don't know. What can we say? This song blew up his career and his hair. It was...
no, that was the commercial.
Which was... It was this song, though. The Pepsi generation. The song was number one in Australia, Canada, UK, and the US, and likely pretty much like everywhere the song was number one. It went 9 times platinum in Australia, 2 times in Canada, 3 times in the UK, and diamond in the US. The music video also helped propel black artists onto MTV. I don't know if you got... This is why I said I have a little more to talk about on this song than any other, because it's poignant. It's important. So black artists weren't getting very much airplay on MTV because MTV was a rock channel, they said, which is just... There's so much about that. It seems weird to me.
So stupid.
And they were trying to say most black artists didn't fit into the vibe, which is very weird because where did rock and roll originate?
Well, the fact that it says music television on...
Right. It's music television, not rock TV. So Walter Yetnikoff was the president of CBS Records at the time, and he got pissed, right? So he threatens MTV. And this is a quote. I said to MTV, I'm pulling everything we have off the air, all our products. I'm not going to give you any more videos, and I'm going to go public and fucking tell them about the fact that you don't want to play music by a black guy. That did the trick. MTV's like, sorry, we'll play it. And guess what happened? Boom. It was extremely popular, became one of their most played videos. So lesson learned, MTV, you morons.
You think they'd play music? No, they just don't play music.
So do you guys, the song is about groupies, according to Michael Jackson, and partially inspired by a situation that happened to him, according to his biographer, J. Randy Tarabelli. So here's what Michael Jackson said of the groupies. They would hang around backstage doors. any band that would come to town, they would have a relationship with. And I think I wrote this out of experience with my brothers when I was little. There were a lot of Billie Jeans out there. Every girl claimed that their son was related to one of my brothers. And Tara Borelli told the story of some letters that were being sent to Michael Jackson back in 1981 from a woman, this is so weird, who said he was the father of one of her twins. She also said that she loved him and wanted to be with him and asked how he could ignore his own flesh and blood. Tarabelli said that one day Michael Jackson then received a package with a picture of the girl, a gun, and instructions on a time he should off himself, stating she would do the same at the same time after taking out their kid so they could all be together in the next life. It was later discovered that this fan was placed in psychiatric care. So I just want to be clear.
Oh, my God.
So I
did not know that.
I didn't either. This is according to a biographer who wrote the biography about Michael Jackson. So
that's kind of insane.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he never responded to her. He never wrote to her, never said anything, but they did research it and found out. I don't even know if she even had kids. So she was just crazy.
I wonder what they did with the gun.
So according to the two of them, part of it was inspired by groupies and part of it was inspired by that. Stewie, why did you pick Billie Jean as your 80s choice?
Well, I mean... It's Michael Jackson, man. He's
very 80s.
He definitely was big in the 80s.
His biggest decade would be the 80s.
Right.
By far.
I think a Thriller. I mean, of course.
Yes.
I mean,
one of the top selling albums of all time.
I mean, he came back. He came from the Jackson 5, and then when he got older, of course, he just blew up.
So, album to
King
over.
No, you're not called the King of Pop because. You're an okay artist.
You're right. We'll call you the king. Whatever.
Right.
Thriller was the first album to oversell the Beatles. It's one of the highest grossing albums of all time. So, absolutely.
That later on he just bought the Beatles.
Just because he's being a jerk.
I don't think he was. I don't think he was being a jerk. I just don't think he thought much about
our duets
that
episode
he,
for
that he might be upsetting somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah, so, you know, the Jackson 5 was around in the 60s and 70s and what have you, and Michael's career started off in the late 70s, and he was big then, and he was still big in the 90s, but the 80s were his era. That was his decade, and you didn't get much bigger than Thriller.
Between him and Madonna, maybe.
This is early 80s, and you got to figure, I mean, everybody owned Thriller. Like, everyone, you wanted a copy of
this. My mother even had Thriller.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it might be the first album cover to inspire the dude laying down, which became a trope on every album cover throughout the 80s.
Yeah, I think
Lionel Richie did it, too. Yeah. A lot of people did, actually.
Tom Selleck.
Wait, he had an album?
Probably did. Everybody did.
Jay gets it.
Oh, stop it.
Now you get it.
Can't get it out of my head now.
Stewie had a cover where he lays down. Teen Beat, Tiger Beat, whatever.
What are you going to bring it up? I'm going to bring it up.
So I think we all agree, man. This is definitely a defining 80s song. And to pick a Michael Jackson song, Billie Jean has that feel of the 80s. And the video, the way. The video with the
light up sidewalk
that lights up. Yeah, he fought for that video. They didn't like...
What?
They wanted to do different things in the video, and he really pushed for some of the video ideas as well. I mean, there's like a freaking tiger.
Yep, there's a panther at the end.
It's a panther. He turns into a panther. That's 80s,
buddy.
He
just brought it from home.
He did. You're not wrong, probably.
He's like, I got one. It's fine.
All right, we're going
to... Michael Jackson and Aaron Neville, same person.
Same person, maybe. Yeah. He's just started taking, like, creatine. He got bulked up. We're going to go into Kevin's 90s. Listen, man. I mean, yeah, we're going to ask why you picked it, but, again, sometimes it's just very, like you said, on the nose why this is 90s. Here you go.
Nice.
It's getting kind of hectic. So this is not from a movie, but it's in a movie. Stu, do you know what movie this is in? Because all I ever think about when I hear "I Got the Power" is a little movie you and I both love, and most people don't.
Oh, Hudson Hawk.
Hudson Hawk. Yeah, he's in there with the headphones on, going "I Got the Power" every time. That's all I think about. This is Snap. This is The Power by Snap. Landing smack dab in 1990 and off the album World Power comes a song that went through multiple renditions. An early techno breakthrough dance mix, it helped set a tone for early 90s music. Landed 13 in Australia, 16 in Canada, 1 in the UK, 2 on the Billboard Hot 100, where it also went platinum. And man, was this song all over Europe. If you want to go check the charts... Just go. It's like number one everywhere in Europe. Of course it is, because it's techno. Kevin,
yes.
What made you pick this as a defining 90s song?
Well, for one, it does have that techno beat that you'll definitely hear in the 90s a whole lot.
And you can dance to it.
Yeah.
They encourage you.
It's kind of what they want.
So. I mean, they want you to have the power to dance. But also, and I've kind of mentioned this before on the show, but like back during the 90s, like hip hop, rap, or, you know, any kind of like African American, or in this case, I guess African British groups would, you know, definitely include a lot of, you know, the culture into the music that you don't see that nowadays. And, you know, that was a very 90s thing, and I kind of definitely miss that. Mm. But yeah.
I'm gonna say yes. I totally get why this would be a defining 90s, so especially early 90s. This was one of those songs that kind of ushered this new style of techno into the mainstream. It was one of those up there. You have a few bands that I wonder if people, like younger people, generations understand. Like we could say, you know, The Power by Snap, and they're like, huh? And then we play it, and they'd probably be like, oh, yeah, I've heard this. They don't know the band, but we did. Like, we've talked about a couple different bands from this kind of – there was this very defining techno era there. It's like a dance club techno thing that started, And our first and second couple, first couple years of high school, this stuff was all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I agree. I agree.
I was all into that stuff.
Yeah, we all were. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was a totally new sound, and I think we were kind of like, oh, this is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
This song is an earworm and a half, man. It's got that beat that just, like, yeah. You're like,
this is a great workout song.
Yeah. And I'm the lyricist, Jesse James.
When was the last time you listened to it?
Me? Like, yesterday?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm the lyricist, Jesse James, guys. Yeah, lyrical. Is it lyrical or lyricist?
I think it's lyrical.
I'm the lyrical, Jesse James.
Jesse James, yeah.
Or I will attack, and you don't want that. All right, so we're going to talk about Matt's 90s pick. So you guys are going to hear it right now.
I want it that way. Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a holiday.
Tell me why.
Ain't nothing but a mistake. Tell me why.
I never want to hear you say,
I want it that way. Am I?
All right, so Matt picked... He picked a little band from the 90s. A very not
little
not,
band?
Not,
little
not band. Very well heard little, of. And they
unknown,
were not
unsigned.
Well known. They were called the Backstreet Boys.
Backdoor Boys.
Backstreet
That's
Boys.
That's a whole other thing.
This is 1999, and off the album Millennium, who's actually a different artist altogether, but it's a great song. That's Robbie Williams, I think, who sang the song Millennium.
I believe so.
Everybody knows this song. It's been parodied, and probably one of my favorite parodies is in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, if you haven't watched that clip, which most people have, I think.
It's pretty great.
Watch that clip, and they should. This was one of those things. We're talking boy bands of the 90s, and it was one of those things in the 90s I didn't like boy bands, and but it was more I just wouldn't admit that I liked boy bands. But really, apparently, I ended up liking boy bands. This was number two in Australia. It was number two in Canada. This one was number one in the UK. And it was number six on the Billboard Hot 100, but actually landed number one on a couple of Billboard charts like the Adult Contemporary and the Top 40 Billboard track. And this song is still around today. Very recently. It is on a commercial right now that you can see today. It's like a poster of them. Have you guys seen it? It's a poster of them on the wall. And she's going to put, like, I think it's laundry detergent, and like one of their faces pops up, and they go, "Tell me why." And she says,
I hear that one on the radio.
And then at the end of the commercial, she's like, "And we can tell stains, bye bye." And they're like, "Nope, nope, wrong band." It's great. It's funny. Matt, what made you pick Backstreet Boys for your 90s pick? You can tell the truth because your first pick wasn't 90s.
Yeah. Well, that is part of it. Yes. But it's part of what I do is I just put my Spotify on shuffle of songs that I like. Mm-hmm. And then that's usually kind of like, oh, this applies to this list that's coming up. And I'll usually, like, you know, if I'm driving, pull over and text you and let you know the song, which is what I did for this one. Actually pulled into a parking lot and was like, 90s song, I Want It That Way by the Backstreet Boys. And then I continued driving home. But the main reason I picked it is because when it did come on, I sang every friggin' word in my car. Windows up, obviously, because, you know, one, it's cold. Two,
you don't want to let it be known.
Grown ass man. Yeah, driving around listening to Backstreet Boys.
Who loves Lisa Loeb and the Backstreet Boys. Screw all you guys.
Yeah.
Well,
so, I mean, but then what was funny was the very next song that came on was Cannibal Corpse, which was hilarious to me.
In all fairness and in your defense, and what I'll say about this is my daughter is 18, and if I start singing this song, she will also start singing this song.
Oh, yeah.
And we will duet it. So, yeah, adorable. It is one of those, like, everybody knows it.
Generations.
It's become a beloved song for as much as in the 90s, like, all the dudes were like, oh, I don't like this song.
And I was one of those guys, too.
Yeah.
I was like, man, boy bands are trash. And now I'm like,
boy bands are great.
You know, there's something about them that they're successful for a reason.
No, it's a catchy jingle. I don't think they were trash. I think they were again, overplayed like the Mariah Carey song.
Yeah, well, and we've had
I think that's why.
And we've had this discussion because I've said on the show before, like, you know, I give Journey crap because Don't Stop Believing is overplayed, but then there are some songs where I'm like, you could play it 100 times and I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And I so it just happens. I think certain songs are like, okay, this one's getting, B-52's like, Love Shack, I get a little annoyed.
It's like when, was it New Kids on the Block's Hanging Tough first came out? I thought it was kind of...
Whoa, stop right there, buddy. Come on, that was good. And you know, boy bands aren't new. You know, Menudo was around in the early 80s, and they were straight up. I mean, they would do dance numbers and everything else. Even a lot of people would tell
them when they turned 18.
A lot of people would tell you. And you know what? We'll do a boy band episode because we've had these discussions. They kill them when they're 18. They kick them out in the cornfield.
Like a Logan's Run children in the corn.
Yeah. In the corn. Even some people would even say, like, you know, the Beatles and the Monkees were boy bands. Like, they were, especially the Monkees, they were put together as a band. Like, so, you know, it's been happening for a long time. So
I think when you talk, say, boy bands, I think it's more they're not playing the instruments mainly.
Pop groups.
Some people think of it that way. I think that's when
they mainly go for stuff like that. I think of it
as bands that were kind of put together and given it. So the Beatles were given a very specific style at first. That's why they came out in the suits and they portrayed a certain image because of how they put themselves together. Nobody created the band, but they did have a publicist who created their look and their style. And then when you get the Monkees, they were literally a band that was put together for a TV show originally.
Right.
So, you know.
Just watch That Thing You Do for the whole story.
Yeah, That Thing You Do.
It's very
So I will agree with this one. I think and also it ushered in. It was
for sure.
It's a very specific style of music and boy bands. Yeah. You know, this was a big thing in the 90s. You know,
And then Blink 182 parodied the videos.
That was funny.
All right, so we're going to go to my 90s pick here, and we'll see what you guys think about this one. Right here, right now, 1990, from the album Doubt. It's Jesus Jones, in case you guys didn't know. The song was inspired by Perestroika in the Soviet Union and the revolutions of 1989, the fall of communism. That is what the song was actually inspired by. They've also stated they were inspired by Prince's Sign of the Times album. It landed 35 in Australia, 18 in Canada, 31 in the UK, and 2 on the Billboard Hot 100. It's a 90s band. It's a 90s sound. It cements a memory into my head into a time when I was in high school. Like, when I hear this song, we talk about this a lot. There are songs I hear that make me think of, you know, oh, yeah, I think that's an 80s song. I listen to it, I think, in the 80s. But then there are songs that I hear, and it, like, yanks me back to a very specific time. That I can't not think of that. And this song makes me remember being in high school. And the song itself is about that moment in history. And it was actually a way to usher in a new decade because it started in 1990. I just don't know if it could be more obvious. This is like why I picked this as a defining song of the 90s. I said 90s song, 90s band, 90s sound. That's why I picked it. What do you guys think, Stu? What do you think of this as a defining 90s song?
Well, like you said, it's kind of got that sound of the rhythmic bands that had the gentle flows, but it was kind of, you know, had a good beat to it, and I don't know, it's something you can dance to.
You guys suck so bad, and not from a movie, but I did like the music video. The music video actually shows a bunch of clips of things like
I like Jesus Jones.
I do too.
That song. Yeah. They were a one-hit wonder, weren't they?
One hit, yeah. But, I mean, they had other songs.
At least here.
So. Matt, what do you think? What do you think of this song as a defining 90s song?
I mean, it stands a test of time, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's a song that, you know, I mean, right here and right now, it's literally talking about the moment you're in.
Right.
So, I mean, it kind of spans the decades while also being squarely a 90s song as well.
Not to be confused with the other song right here, right now.
Right here, right now, right here,
Right, which is apparently a Right Here, Right Now by Fatboy Slim.
Yeah, that's what I was just singing.
Or the Van Halen song.
Right Here, okay. Right Now.
I hadn't heard it.
Right Here, so. Right Now.
No, Van Halen's is just Right Now.
Oh,
my right. Yeah, it's a great song.
Which, you know,
Kev, what do you think? What do you think of this as a defining 90s song?
I think it's definitely a great choice. It's, you know, it does give you the feel of the times and the optimism that one thought they would have in the 90s. So, yeah, this definitely hits the spot.
So we're going to go to Stewie's 90s song. And I'm going to say this. When Matt sent me his list and I said, dude, unfortunately, the song you sent me is from like 2001 or something like that. Or I'm sorry, like 20. What was it from? I don't know.
It was like, it was.
Yeah, your 90s song. It was like 2001.
Yeah.
And he sent me a question and he said, I'm going to assume somebody's already picked. She's all the one. And I said yes.
Almost accidentally added Smells Like Nirvana. You know, side note, guys, tapeworms, that is, I'm making the playlist, which will be available at time of release of this episode.
Yeah.
And it is already shaping out to be pretty fantastic.
Yes. And this
and is a. It's going to be greatest hits of all three.
Yes, this is going to be one of those like multi. Yeah, you could hit play on this and get all the. That's it was kind of. I was thinking the same thing, man. This is going to be a good playlist right here. So, yes, he puts all those on Spotify. So go check it out. And once you find them, you can find all of them because you can just go through Matt. So,
yeah.
This is Nirvana. Smells Like Teen Spirit, 1991.
If you follow close enough, you'll see a preview of each episode. As we record it.
That's true, because you put it up beforehand.
Yeah. I make it while we're recording the show a lot of times.
This is the lead track from Nevermind. And this is the song that made Nirvana a household name and has been noted by many as the point that grunge went mainstream. I want to take a moment to read what Kurt Cobain said about the song, because we mentioned it a few weeks ago and heard it was an anthem for teens to push back against the status quo, and Dave Grohl implied it was just Cobain shoving syllables together. But but he said some other stuff about the song, too, which is kind of cool. He said, I was trying to write the ultimate pop song. I was basically trying to rip off the Pixies. I have to admit it. When I heard the Pixies for the first time, I connected with that band so heavily that I should have been in that band, or at least a Pixies cover band. We used their sense of dynamics, being soft and quiet and then loud and hard. The title itself came from when Kurt Cobain. This is so good. I never knew this, by the way. The title comes from Kurt Cobain's friend Kathleen Hanna, singer for Riot Girl band Bikini Kill. Anyway, she wrote on his wall, "Kurt smells like Teen Spirit." She was actually making fun of him, telling him that he smelled like the deodorant Teen Spirit. But Kurt Cobain had never heard of the deodorant Teen Spirit, and he thought it was a revolutionary slogan because they had just been talking about punk music and anarchism.
Like you do.
But she was actually just giving him a hard time and saying he smelled like teenage deodorant. So it's the only song credited to all three members of the band on the album. Don't know if you guys knew that. And the song was never intended to be a hit, but rather just a little groundwork for the release of Come As You Are, which they expected might be able to cross into mainstream. But college stations, they got a hold of this song and they started putting it into rotation. And that was that. It's been dubbed an anthem for apathetic kids of Generation X. The song went 9 times platinum, number 5 in Australia, 8 times platinum, and 9 in Canada, 4 times platinum and 7 in the UK, and platinum with a 6 spot on the Hot 100 and number 1 on the alternative chart in the United States of America. Stewie, why did you pick this one? And I, again, obviously, Matt was thinking about putting it on his too, so I can see where the trend is going.
Well, I mean, when it first came on, it blew up, and it created a genre on its own. So, I mean, honestly, if you didn't have any other bands that came after them, this song created basically the grunge movement.
Or at least introduce the grunge movement into mainstream.
And it also killed the glam movement.
And it is the song that is, or the band and the song that is attributed to killing glam, yeah.
So, I mean, in a way, it defines the 90s.
It kind of ushered in a new generation of music.
All right. Totally
yeah, good. I mean, absolutely. It's an anthem. It set up a band that people loved. set up a story that was very endearing to the 90s, and that then set up another band that people love, if you think about it, the Foo Fighters. You know, we went from Nirvana to the Foo Fighters.
I was a big 80s glam metal fan, but then when this came out, I kind of dug it, and I kind of got into it as well.
So, yeah, I bought the single.
I mean, I was a big fan of Pearl Jam, and they came followed after Nirvana. So,
yeah, I'm definitely on board with you. I think this is a really great song to put as a defining '90s song. What do you guys think?
Ditto, most definitely.
I mean, obviously, it was going to be
my list. I mean, I was going to put it on my list. It's really cool because what you're seeing happening too. And by the way, not because none of us knew what each other was going to pick, but inevitably, what we're doing is you just heard the Power by Snap. And then you're hearing Right Now by Jesus Jones, and then Smells Like Teen Spirit, and it's like these are drastically different songs, but put them together, we're defining the 90s.
I want it that way as well.
And I want it that way. We are defining different pieces of the decade.
Completely different styles of music.
But covering the entire thing because of it, and that's really cool. I'm going to say that we're moving into our 2000s decade.
I do want to put an honorable mention into the 90s.
Sure.
Yeah, go for it.
I know that not everyone here would like appreciate it, but like the band Crisscross with Jump.
That was like a woohoo.
That was like a song too.
That was my stepson upstairs and
that was Kevin.
Kevin
number one.
He's autistic and we've talked about it here on the show before. And just out of nowhere, he just let out a woohoo. And so if you heard that in the background, he's just really happy about our picks.
Yeah, he's flying on Falcor's back upstairs.
Right? Yeah. what were you saying, Stu? I'm sorry.
I was saying like Crisscross, the song Jump, along with like, you know, like House of Pain and Jump and all that, the rap era around that time.
Yeah. Van Halen Jump.
Van Halen jumped. The Pointer Sisters, they also jumped. Yeah. A lot of people were jumping.
I was going to say something about MC Hammer, but he doesn't have anything with jumping.
He doesn't, no.
No.
He was just too legit to quit.
House of Pain. Yeah.
They jumped around. Yeah, it was a lot of jumping. What's up with that? Yeah. Jumper was a song. Jesus. Wish you could step back from that ledge, my friend. Yeah. He was talking to all those guys who were trying to jump. He was trying to talk them out.
Like, guys, there's so much jumping going on.
You're jumping. Yeah, let's step back.
Write a song about that.
Let's step back from the ledge a little bit.
Yeah. Ties with all the lies that you've been living in.
I want to tell you a quick story because you've mentioned Crisscross. So my wife brings up a picture and says, so this is the hairstyle that is in her boss. She like nannies for two kids and they're like early teens. You know, one of them's an early teenager. So anyway, she pulls up this picture and she says, this is the new hairstyle that teenage boys are doing right now. I don't know if you've seen this, but he told her he puts a hat on. He's got longer hair, brushes the hair up and then like hairsprays it to keep it up and then takes the hat off. That's like the new look.
What?
It is. If you go look, there's pictures of it all over. This is like the new style.
Videos of it being done and everything.
Crazy, right? So she starts really ripping on it, saying it looks stupid, saying how dumb it is. And I said, you know, but every old person says this. I was like, we had mullets. I was like, and I'm not saying much.
And the bowl cut.
But I said, I can name two specific trends. Two specific trends, guys. Mm-hmm. There was a trend where people didn't tie their shoes, and there was a trend where people wore their clothes backwards. So before we judge,
I did that.
Every generation tries to figure out a way to define themselves different than what any
bell bottoms.
They try really hard. Jankos.
They're making an appearance. They're coming back.
I know. Two things happen.
Holy crap. There was a new metal festival that happened recently, and I heard somebody refer to it as Jinko de Mayo.
That's funny. That's really funny. Two things tend to happen with every generation, guys. They're going to try to find something unique, and no matter how weird it might be, to define them to make them different than any other generation. And they're also going to go back to about two to three generations previous and steal something that they did. Stu mentioned bell bottoms. Bell bottoms made a comeback there for a while.
A few times, yes. Actually.
So, yep. and that was very like.
And I think they're coming back again.
That was very like '60s, late '60s, early '70s. You know, bell bottoms, and then they kind of made it. So that it happens in every generation.
Well, when the swing dancing era, you know, was
the new swing,
coming back. You know, Zoot Suits made a comeback.
Yeah, we did a new swing episode here on the show, and
came back
we talked to
Jimbo Mathis.
Jimbo Mathis from Squirrel Nut Zipper. And we talked about Nuo Swing, as it was called. And, yeah, it was a really cool era to bring back. But, yeah, you're right. We started seeing some of the, like, the clothing and outfit trends and stuff. And so that's a cool one, though. I'd wear a Zoot suit today because they look cool. All right, so we're moving into the first decade of the 2000s, and we're going to go into Kevin's pick right here.
And this is for them nuts working at the airport who got laid off. I take my shades off. If you look straight in my eyes, you still might see your disguise.
Because the whole world loves it when you don't get down.
The whole world. Big Boy and Dre presents Outkast, 2001. 95 in Australia, 19 in the UK, 19 on the Billboard Hot 100. This song talks about the fact that people love to see others at the bottom, especially the media, but it celebrates taking a positive stance no matter the circumstances. That is the song. This is the song that sort of introduced Outkast to the world, really, and they've been around ever since. Kev, we know you're a fan of Outkast. What made you pick this song as your 2000s defining song?
Well, this is even though the 2000s kind of sucked.
we're still in them, brother.
Yeah, I know.
We're not done.
We're not done at all. I think this song was released right after 9/11, and it's definitely brings a... you know, a little bit of positivity into the decade. And, you know, thought, you know, the 2000s could use a little something like that.
That's fair. I like that this song introduced Outkast, and I would say they were
I would disagree. Well, I think there's a lot of other songs that would, you know, brought, you know,
I feel like this is the song that made them mainstream again. Like, it doesn't mean they weren't around, but this is kind of...
I felt Bombs Over Baghdad brought them out.
Yeah, I would say Bombs Over Baghdad before this.
Really? I mean, maybe.
Yeah. Hmm.
This is one of the first ones I remember hearing. But, teach around. But Outkast definitely introduced a new sort of style with what they did. Like, I think we've said this on the
show. Like the groove rap.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned this very thing on the show before, but like, would bands like LMFAO exist if bands like Outkast didn't first? Because I don't think so. I think they paved a certain way for a certain sound.
Well, they like are the, like one of the poster children of, you know, Southern rap.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And I you definitely have that more like poppier fun sound, even if some of the stuff
very funky.
Yeah. A lot of funk inspired stuff too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're a really fun band. I'll give you this. I like actually again what we're about to do. We're about to between the four of us cover different genres or styles, sort of music, kind of. There's a lot of rap. I'm gonna say there's a lot of rap, but different, all different rap. So I'd give this to you. What do you guys think, Stu? What do you think?
Like you said, this song particularly may not have made me think of them being like come up in the 2000s, but they definitely were a part of the movement, I guess you could say, because rap, I know, became pretty big in the 90s, but it kind of got clarified in the 2000s. Like they changed their sound and had different genres.
Well, we were seeing the like disappearance, like gangster rap was starting to kind of disappear. You know,
both Biggie and Tupac had been dead for a little bit now. A
couple years.
And the style has changed just a tad bit, and it's a little more poppy,
a little more fun again. Dance. Remember the 80s, we had like a lot of fun rap. In the 90s, we didn't really have that a lot.
No.
And then in the 2000s, it started kind of coming back in a little bit, but with a new sound, new style.
I mean, you had some, you know, with like...
Well, you got Digital Underground.
Yeah. It's true. Yeah, I don't think anything ever goes away completely.
No, but
some that we wish would, yes.
Right.
Matt, what do you think as far as this being a... that's going away, dude. That's kind of dying out. Yeah.
Thankfully.
What do you think of this as being a defining 2000 song, first decade?
Well, You know my love for Outkast. And honestly, this is a song I forgot about.
Yeah, right?
Really?
I could understand that.
I forgot about it. But when it came on, I was like, oh yeah.
I love it. I did the same thing, dude. When he sent it to me, I was like, oh my God, I used to listen to the song all the time. And
not only that, but it features Killer Mike, who is currently in Run the Jewels, which is awesome as well. So I know Connie is a big fan of them. And yeah.
I think it's funny what you just said, though, because you're like, I forgot about it until I heard it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, and me too, and I love the song. It's not like I forgot about Outkast, though. I still listen to Outkast. This is just a song that I haven't listened to in a while, and I'm like, maybe I should.
Kind of like later era Outkast, and which, by the way, have anybody on the show listened to the new album that Andre 3000 put out?
I have not.
I have not.
What are your thoughts?
Okay, this is
All right, this isn't
Andre 3000 playing a flute album. This is Andre Benjamin playing the flute, and you barely hear the flute. That's my take. I do highly respect the man for doing an all flute album, you know, and it's like one of the biggest selling albums.
Yeah.
Just like the past few weeks, so
yeah, it's highly anticipated. The song titles, I believe, were compared to Fall Out Boy lyrics, just because they're like the song titles are full sentences on every one of them, and the first track on that album is like 12 or 13 minutes long.
Oh my gosh,
all flute.
I don't know about you, Matt, because we're both huge Outkast fans.
Yeah.
I would consider Andre 3000 one of those top, you know, 10 rappers.
Mm-hmm.
But I disagree with him.
I don't know how he is at flute playing.
Yeah. As a flautist.
As a flautist.
He's no Jethro Tull.
There you go.
Hear him do Aqualung.
Name of the band, not the guy. I want to hear him do Aqualung. You said it.
3000 kind of want to hear it. Metallica.
So
I will disagree with Andre 3000's take on being too old to do rap. I think he's
really capable.
He believes
that, you know, nobody, you know, who's 40 and up should be rapping, and I disagree with that.
We need more of it, probably, and not less.
Yeah, more than ever.
I mean, Usher just came out with a new single recently. I mean, that's...
I believe it's pronounced Usher.
Yeah, we all know the proper pronunciation. We were taught it. Thanks to
check your
Buddha.
Before you wreck yourself.
I had a point, and I don't know what it was anymore. you were talking about the fact that his new album is so drastically different, and I think also that people get to a point too where it's like, okay, I'm famous and popular, and I've made money. So now we talked about this with Radiohead. Now maybe I want to try some stuff because I want to try it as an artist and see if it works, see if it's something I can even do. Because now it's, I'm sure he loves the fact that he made money off this new album and that it's doing well. But like, it's not about that anymore. Like, I don't need to make the money. So if I make the money, great, but I want to try something that I've always wanted to try. So, you know, it could be one of those things too. All right, we're going to do Matt's 2000, and this is Matt's choice right here. This is Metro Station Shake It, Maddie. This is from 2007, the album of the same name as the band there, Metro Station. I know this song, but for a different reason, that is very 2000s. This was their first song to land on the charts, number 2 in Australia, 4 in Canada, 6 in the UK, and 10 on the Billboard Hot 100. The song became a TikTok trend. And all these different TikTok dances. But here's the thing. The song's not about dancing. The song is about S-E-X. It's also about a guy that seems a bit nervous after taking a girl home from the club. Or perhaps they're just really cold because they're naked. And that's why they're shaking. Either way, it's a naughty, naughty song. A little bit of funny bit. Little funny bit for you guys. In 2008, a commercial bumper popped up on Disney Channel that said Shake It by Metro Station. I don't know why it popped up, but it did. So, you know, and this song's all about sex, but like people didn't know it was about sex. It was getting played all over the place. And people just were like thinking it was this fun, upbeat, poppy song and didn't realize it's naughty. Matt, what made you put this one on your 2000s?
It kind of just like encompassed that whole like early to mid 2000s Warped Tour, like poppy emo music kind of a era that I was listening to a lot of this stuff at the time. Also, fun fact, if you were not aware, Trace Cyrus, brother of Miley Cyrus, is one of the members of this band.
I did know that, yeah. And I don't even know this band that well. I'm pretty sure you told me that.
This is about the main song that they're really known for.
And
it came back in TikTok, and I think even Vine. It was big during the Vine days as well.
Yeah, I only knew that thing about Trace Cyrus because you told me. We were talking about maybe not even this song. I don't know.
Yeah.
And you told me that, and I was like, are you shitting me? Yeah. That's drastically.
Here's another reason.
He went different than the rest of his family, didn't he?
Yeah.
If you shake it like this, I can shake.
I really want to hear Miley doing it now. Also, if the fact that I'm about to say doesn't scream 2000s, they released some of their music on their MySpace page as well. That was when when they were first coming out.
Early 2000s, right there.
They grew up. They grew their audience through their MySpace page.
This song is taking the 90s and moving. We're seeing the transition from the early first generation of the 90s, and this is 2007, into the next decade of the 90s. We see this song making, because we're starting to get it. That's this style of music is starting to move in, I think. And this kind of sound and stuff takes over for a while. And that's when you start getting those, like you said, the meme, the Vines and the TikToks. And this stuff is starting to come big, your MySpaces and your Facebooks. And the song's kind of ushering in. So I agree with you. I think this is a really good song to kind of to add to it.
Yeah.
Stoopy Doopy Doo.
He's also helped write some music for his dad.
He featured
Loretta Lynn and George Jones.
That make the George Jones sing. So what do you think of this as a defining 2000s, first decade of the 2000s song?
I mean, I'm not sure about defining, but it's a damn good song for the era. I mean, I kind of forgot about the song, actually.
Yeah, well,
you know, I agree with Stu. Actually, this is the first time I'm ever hearing the song.
Oh, really?
I don't think I've ever heard it, yeah.
You'll
be dancing your ass off.
Well, later. I mean,
it's got a nice beat and you can dance.
In all fairness,
it's a good song.
In all fairness, it's towards the end of the first decade of the 2000s, and the question comes is, what were you listening to then? And were you starting to get old enough that you were getting a little more set in your styles?
I believe I was listening to nu metal by then, so.
Maybe not branching out as much?
Oh, I was too. Yeah,
probably not.
I don't know. I think that happens. At some point, because I still listen to new music, but people will bring up people. I'm like, I don't know who that is. I find that even though I still listen to new music, I don't listen to as much of it.
I mean, I branch out more now than I did then. I'll tell you that.
You do. You're a little different. Like, well, no, I mean, as far as what you do musically, like a lot of people will, like Matt listens to a lot of more obscure stuff that are smaller bands still.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I don't know how much most of us branch out to the like more popular mainstream now, or are we getting a little more set in our ways?
I kind of get into the newer artists. I mean,
what station? You can't claim certain stations because they all look the same.
I do Q102.
I'm just fucking with you. We can't claim a certain station here in town because they still play the same shit over.
Same thing from like the 90s
and over. They never change. All right. Well, here is my 2000 pick.
Wow.
Is this the first mention of Eminem?
On this, I mean, we've probably the first song that's been on a list.
Good.
So this is Lose Yourself from Eminem, from the film and the soundtrack 8 Mile. So
that's have a good beat.
Yeah. It's me this week that's picking a lot of
movies.
It's from a movie.
Written by some fella named Marshall Mathers. I don't know who the fuck that is, but it's who wrote the song. So the song sums up the basic plot of the movie. That's what the song is about. But it also talks about seizing an opportunity when it presents itself. This was Eminem's first Billboard Hot 100 number one single. This song was written on set during breaks while filming 8 Mile. Taryn Manning, who played Jimmy's ex-girlfriend Janine in 8 Mile, said in an interview with MTV that during the filming of the movie and any downtime Eminem was writing, and that you could, quote, just see him formulating stuff in his head. According to studio engineer Stephen King, not that Stephen King, a different one, spelled different, who was talking weird, to, he was talking King to Rolling now. Stone magazine. Right. Eminem recorded the song in a portable studio on the set while he was on break from shooting. So not only did he write it on set, he recorded it on set. And he used only one take for each verse. This is what they're saying. The sheet on which he wrote the song appears in the movie 8 Mile in the scene where his character is riding while riding the bus.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I know that scene real well.
So the song won an Academy Award for Best Song, an MTV Video Music Award, and a Grammy. That means Eminem needs an Oscar and a Tony to get his EGOT. Yeah, I mean, he
just two steps away.
He did, but he got the hard ones.
He got the hard ones, yeah.
No, Grammy's probably not that hard for him, actually. But an Emmy, he got a freaking Emmy, and he got a Grammy. So he needs an Oscar and a Tony, and he'll be good. So,
isn't Tony's like daytime
TV? No,
no, that's
plays.
Plays theater.
Tony's theater, which he could totally do. He should do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm surprised he hasn't tried to.
Should be go on Hamilton.
This song was number one. Okay. In pretty much damn near everywhere. Australia, yes. Canada, yes. UK and US, yes. And a lot of other places. Also, the highest certification we've ever talked about here on this show, 16 times platinum in Australia.
Damn.
Five times in Canada, five times in the UK, and 13 times in the US. I picked it because most people believe this is Eminem's signature song at this point. To me, this captures a very specific style of rap. That was very big in the 2000s, early 2000s. Also shows the bridge and evolution of rap music to me. It shows where it's evolving. Also chose it because, once again, it's about seizing the moment and being present right then, and because it's just a very recognizable song to tons of people. There are other Eminem songs that could have been picked, but this was the song that kind of made me like Eminem. There are one or two others, but I wasn't an Eminem fan, but then this song kind of speaks to people, I think, and so a lot of people hold it dear.
Right.
Matt, what do you think? What do you think of this as far as it being a defining 2000 song?
I mean, it's kind of a huge song.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of earns the place.
Some people would say it's the biggest huge song. I mean, it, you know.
It's huge.
It's huge. Some people would say it's my best song. I wrote it. Oh, yeah. I mean, it is a massively popular song. It's Eminem's most famous song too, and he's a huge artist. I mean, you take a guy who is just kind of broke into the market. Like, let's face it, he's a white rapper. When it happens, and it's rare that they happen to this degree, that right. He's just sort of universally accepted.
I think we only seen like a couple white rappers since then or before that.
Yeah, most of them were kind of jokes.
I mean, you got the BC Boys before him.
But even them, they were more of a punk rap style.
Right.
He was taken and
then you had Vanilla Ice.
Kinda. Yeah. Kind of a joke.
And what's his name?
Snow.
Snow. Yeah.
Kind of a joke.
Yeah.
Third base.
Yeah, third base.
Not a joke. Yeah. But
Third base was good.
But that's what I mean. He was respected. Like,
but he was also part of a band.
Other rap artists respected him for how raw he was and for how good he was at what he did.
And he respected the culture.
And he respected the culture.
Yeah.
And I think that was really important and kind of, like I said, bridging that gap.
I think Eminem also grew as an artist from like when he first
came 100%.
Because I mean, was it the Real Slim Shady? It's definitely a distant departure or the Lose Yourself is definitely a departure from that.
And he 8 Mile was loosely based on his real life, and I think he was being a lot more serious. I would make an argument that not one of my favorite songs, but Slim Shady could have been on this list as well.
Right.
I think that would have been a totally fair pick for somebody.
I think the Lose Yourself is way the best I've ever heard him since his, like, started.
Yeah, I think most people kind of consider it to be his best. So
yeah,
I think so. So we're on agreement. This one fits.
Definitely fits.
This one fits. Okay. Well, like I said, man, Matt is the only one who didn't pick rap. which I'm really appreciative that you didn't. It's actually weird that I did pick rap, to be honest. And
Eminem
and
that.
Eminem. Yeah, but Matt's the only one who didn't. So thank you, Matt, for not. Here is, or else it would have been just all rap, 2000s rap, which we just did not that long ago. And not only did we do it, but Stewie's pick was on there. Here's Stewie's pick.
Go, Charlie, it's your birthday. We're going to party like
this. I can never hear this song without thinking about Kevin's grandma.
Neither can I.
Can never hear this song without thinking of Kevin's grandma, and Kevin said, neither can I. This is In Da Club by Fitty. Good old 50 Cent. Get Rich or Die Trying from 2003. Written by Fitty and his producer. Do you guys know who else wrote this? Who
Dr. was Dre.
Thank you. 50 was discovered a year prior by anyone?
Eminem.
Then he was introduced by Dr. Dre. He ended up recording several tracks in just 5 days. And here's what 50 said about this one. Dre, he'll play dope beats. He'll say, these are the hits, 50. So pick one of these and make a couple of singles or something. The very first time he heard me rap on In Da Club, he said, yo, I didn't think you was going to go where to go there with it, but you know it works. He was probably thinking of going in a different direction with that song. Then he expanded it into a hit record. He also said he wrote he wanted to write this song in contrast to some of the edgier stuff on the album, and wanted the song to be more of a celebration of life. He talked about this one. We talked about this one not that long ago, like I said on our 2000s rap episode. But it went 10 times platinum and number one in Australia. It was number one in Canada, 3 in the UK, where it went 3 times platinum. And then the US, it went diamond and landed at number one. I think we also talked about, I didn't put it on this one, but that this song started charting on the downloads for phone rings. And that could be kind of important. But Stewie, why? What made you pick In Da Club by 50 Cent?
Well, I mean, definitely the rap style had changed, of course. Kind of got a little more poppy, a little more, as you said, a little more lighter, not so dark and gangsta, I guess you could say.
Yeah, they started saying a lot of stuff in their lyrics that could later be considered questionable.
Right.
There's a lot of allegation and hints and stuff that maybe you're kind of like, well.
But In Da Club also was the catalyst to more in the future artists with his band or his group G Unit, and along with a couple others. They kind of branched out, and he was the seed that was planted for the other artists to come out, I guess you could say.
So what do you guys think as far as In Da Club being a defining song of the early 2000s?
Yeah, it's a good, good choice.
What with your personal connection to it and all?
Very succinct. what with your personal connection?
Yeah. Love you, Grandma.
I hope she listens. Oh, God. That has hurt my head.
Forget. She was a good woman, I assume.
It never met her. I don't know her. Can't say, but I assume.
I'm sure she's
99 and a half years old.
Like, yeah, exactly. Matt, what do you think? Damn. And then further question, like, is there, like, obviously it's weird because we all kind of went, well, except for you, we all kind of went rap, and that was not intentional.
Yeah,
but like we, I feel like we missed out on someone with the 2000s. Not intentionally, but
well, like I said, I mean, I was really big into nu metal at that time too. But I think the 50 Cent song was just a bigger hit, and it was like a lot more people were listening to it.
I mean, but what do you think, Matt? As far as it being defining, like, do you feel like that's legit? Like,
I mean, it's valid. You know, we'll say that. It's just there. And to kind of go back to what you were asking about, I think that there was just a shift in preferred musical styles and not a ton of well-known, you know, music from other genres that came out at the time.
Yeah, I like that.
I mean, obviously it wasn't country because we talked about that and that was trash. And then, you know, like I can't really think of too many like really, really well-known 2000s like rock songs.
So do you want to know what right I think off, about that head, since so, you just yeah. said that? Because I was thinking about that too. I think they existed, but they didn't sound much different than the 90s yeah, stuff.
It well, didn't stand
also,
out.
Also, this is the year of Napster too. So a lot of the
yeah,
songs
this is early Napster stuff. That's stolen. True. But like we didn't
everything
hear
it was mislabeled.
Yeah, yeah.
We heard a significant change in country for better or worse, and in rap, right. But we didn't hear a significant change in
no,
rock.
They, actually, I think they called it. They thought rock was dying.
And no, I feel like it's still around and still very similar style.
Yeah.
Now we did have some bands that again came out in the 90s. That had there is some like Linkin Park stuff from the early 2000s and stuff that totally could have hit this list and would have been good. And there are, you know, but
the also the genres kind of twisted together at that point. They were starting to combine
the you know, rock,
rack rock,
words are hard, man. I'm telling you.
Words are hard. They're very difficult. But you're not. Yeah, that's true. We had a lot of that. And
even nowadays, currently, they're trying to combine genres all over the place.
They're just combining genres all over
the
place.
Was it the country rap going on and stuff
filthy
like that?
Beasts combining their genres.
When you say it like that.
Yeah. When you say it like this, can you say it like that?
shake it.
Oh, yours just makes that song should just be on like commercials for shake bottles and stuff like shake
weights.
And... Yeah, oh, shake weights. I totally think you should put that commercial together now. yeah, I mean, I am even now sitting here thinking like, okay, well, we didn't talk about a lot of rock and I'm trying to think specifically of early 2000s rock song. And I'm like, is that 90s, late 90s? I can't remember. There was stuff I was listening to. I think there was this kind of movement in kind of like more, like you guys said, kind of like newer music, like people were coming out through things like Napster and stuff, and you started having your streaming services and stuff too. So music was coming out that like we weren't getting the same kind of radio hits.
All right.
And so we all might have discovered music, and then the question comes is, and they might have even been a big band, but does that mean you guys know who they are? Or is it just something I listen to?
So like I said, I listen to a lot of nu metal, and that stuff was not displayed really well on the radio stations and and through streaming and all that, and I think that's why they didn't blow up as huge as they could have been. They're pretty big, but not as huge.
Right? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like a band is still massively big because it can reach a broader audience now with the internet and streaming.
Right.
But that audience may be very specific to that sound or that band now, whereas used to it would spread through radio, and it's totally different, right. I think. So it's funny to me that we do the three decades, and it's like we're all like 80s. Oh, totally hear that one. 90s, totally hear that one. 2000s, like, oh, well. It's like it just really shows the change in music.
It's also because there's so many different genres now. And
yes,
it's like,
so many different genres
you
now.
Really can't, you really can't place...
Well, that's
song.
Yeah, that's not death metal. That's speed metal.
Are we really going to bring that up?
I'm just saying. Please. The break, and I don't always even know what makes one genre and not the other, you know?
Yeah.
So, everybody branches off. It's like religion. There's a million branches at this point. I can't keep up. Well, we believe what you guys believe, only we don't think women should be able to wear pants, so we're going to create our whole... little offshoot over here. So it's weird, but it gets that way. People get very particular about their style, you know. So
yeah,
It is what it is. I think this was a really cool episode to do just because we got to not only put these songs together and see this really kind of diverse group of songs, but we really got to watch how music has evolved over the decades with this one. So I'm very happy. Very, very happy. You guys did good.
Cool. So happy.
You guys did good, and you had lovely lists. Lovely lists.
Lovely lists.
And you guys.
Lovely day. Lovely day.
Lovely day. 5 years. Going into 5 years, and we still break into song. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, I think overall, guys, it was a fantastic list. I think we covered the gamut. 4 years, I learned it. We covered
it. Guys. Yay. Everybody clap for Jay.
I did good. Yay.
Good job.
But really, seriously, it's, you know, we see in the 80s, we see a couple of you guys hit on, we got some new wave in there. We got some pop in there. You know, and then we get into 2000s or the 90s. We've got rock in there. We've got more pop in there, and just we really got to see a kind of a diversity in our music choices as well. And it came together really well. I know this one when I first threw it out there, but it was like, "Ooh, God!" And I'm like, it's okay. Don't freak yourselves out. Just go. I could see this fitting or being a theme. It doesn't have to be the only theme. It's just one you pick. So worked out really well. Like you said, Matt has put a playlist together, and it's probably already out there. So you can go listen to it now. There won't be a link on the website yet because I'm always behind on those. But there will be a playlist up. And if you go to one of those older playlists, again, Matt's name will pop up as the creator of the playlist. Once you click that, you'll see all his playlists. It's really simple.
Yeah, because I'm a Spotify alchemist.
He is an alchemist. That's what he got labeled.
Oh, so what is your 2023?
He's an alchemist. Because he creates, not just for the show, he creates a ton of playlists anyway.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, just for myself. And then, like, I mean, there's 100 and something episode or a playlist just for the show. Plus, I make my own. So,
God, we've been doing this way too long. We got to shut the hell up. People are getting sick of hearing us. Now we're going to let them see us. Maybe if we can get that figured out.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is it. This is the end for this year, man. The end of the of season four.
This is the end.
End of season four for the show. That's it. We're moving into season five, and things are going to change a little bit. So let's break down. Let's take just a couple of minutes and talk about what to expect moving forward. So we really like talking about music. And if you guys recall early on, we talked about other things. And we switched to kind of mostly just music for the most part. But there's been a lot of talk about wanting to branch into other things. And we talk to a lot of people. We'll interview people that aren't just music. Most of who we interview is. But we talk to voice artists and, you know, we'll talk to composers and writers. And we also have been going to a lot of cons and meeting people, you know, who do different things. And we're like, well, we kind of want to talk about that. We want to change up the format to simplify things a little. Not just for us, but for the folks at home, right? So what's going to happen moving forward is the show is going to be broken down. We're going to pretty much get it to an hour. It's going to take a little work. And there's going to be two 30-minute segments. And the first segment, we're going to talk music. Now, we may do the occasional playlist where we each pick a song. But not always. Sometimes we're just going to focus on, and we've got a lot, man. We've all been putting it together and talking, and we're going to focus on a band or a genre or style, and we're going to get a little more in depth with that. And then the second half of the show is going to be about different things. It could be, we could talk about movies, we could review stuff, we could do a Twisted Kid in there, all kinds of stuff. And I'll kind of let you know the very first episode that's going to come out next year. We're going to be doing a recast. So one of the things, Kevin and I did a video show, short-lived video show many, many years ago called Geekin' News. And on that, we would occasionally take a movie and cast it. If that movie was made today, we would both pick our cast. And then we would kind of vote who we think was the best. And that's who we would do. So we're going to do that again. We're going to start doing that again. And we picked a movie, and all of us are picking our cast. And I can say, I have mine cemented in. Matt, I think, has most of his cemented in. Not, I think there were still one or two. You were kind of going back and forth.
Yeah, there's a few more. So
Kevin's got a few of his locked in, I think. Stu, have you thought of any of yours who you would put in the cast?
I have still nothing.
And what we're going to do is...
I'm horrible at recasting.
Once we get them all locked in, we're going to... Before the show, we're going to share them with each other. We're not going to discuss it. I'm just going to let everybody know what everybody picks so you can be thinking about it. And then when we get on the show, we're going to go over our choices and then decide who, if it was made today, this is who we would put in it. So recast is one of the things we're going to be doing, and that will be on our first episode. So you see, it's going to be a little different, but we're still going to talk music. Music's still going to be a thing we do. And I'll be honest, should we tease? Should we say what our first episode is going to be?
Nanny boo boo, nanny boo. Oh, not that tease.
No, not that kind of tease. Seems to be one you're aware of. I say we go ahead and do it. I don't know.
Sure.
So our first episode, our music discussion is going to be East Coast versus West Coast rap. We are going to get into the background of it and what we thought about it and what we remembered going on. And we're going to have a full on discussion about East Coast versus West Coast rap. So I think we're all kind of excited about it. Looking forward to it.
I know what side I'm on.
I don't have a side.
I don't have Midwest. A side.
I am.
That's
sweet.
That's very weird, but okay. I would argue that that's a lie too. I would argue that you were listening to East Coast stuff as well.
Well, I like Pac better than Biggie.
Yeah, but you still liked Biggie.
Yeah, he's okay.
So that's the first thing we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about East Coast versus West Coast, and we're going to do a recast. And we won't tell you the movie yet. We will put that out on our social media so you guys can tell us who you would cast in it. Again, not if it's being remade. If this movie, the same movie, was being made today, who would we put in it? So, yeah. So be looking forward to that. Hopefully you guys like the new format, and it'll be a little easier to digest, and we'll be getting to talk about some new and cool stuff. With that being said, Happy New Year, everybody. We're going into 2024, which is weird because this will be 30 fucking years since I graduated high school.
Oh my
God.
You don't speak of this.
So weird, man. It is very off-putting at times. We had a little get-together here last night, and Stewie was over here, and our friend Spanky was over here, and he just turned 50, or he's about to turn 50. I'm sorry, he's about to turn 50, and we're talking about, he goes, dude, it just don't feel right. I was like, I get it.
Though, I don't feel...
Mentally.
Mentally.
My body definitely feels it. Yeah. My brain, not as much. Yeah. But my body feels it, so. But yeah, man, Happy New Year. Everybody be safe. Everybody have a good time, but not too much fun. Don't do anything I wouldn't do. Don't do anything I would do. Somewhere in between there's a gray area. Sorry. But yeah, have fun. Happy New Year. Please come back next year. We love all you guys. Seriously.
Even you.
Even you. Yeah. You know who you are. You know who you are. But yeah, thanks everybody. I mean, like, you guys have made it great, and we've got to meet and talk to some really cool people because of it, and we really appreciate it. So looking forward to another year of this show when everybody gets fired and they recast all of us. Who would play us? Who would play?
Oh, God. Let's do that.
Yeah. Let's recast us. Oh, God.
Darius Rucker.
Darius Rucker, Beavis.
Shut the fuck up.
Are you going to have someone older portray you?
Shut the fuck up, Matt. Well, if it's Beavis, then it could just be Luke Bryant, because we've determined he looks exact. I'm sorry, he looks just like Butthead. It's fine. Luke Bryant could play.
And Matt would be played by any of the Duck Dynasty guys.
Somebody with a big-ass beard. Santa Claus. Matt will now be portrayed by Santa Claus, the actual Santa Claus. Oh, God. That's weird. We love you guys. We appreciate you guys. Have a happy new year. Thanks for sticking around. And remember, until next time, we have the opportunity to speak to always.
Stay awesome.
are times that you feel like your head is a big old bucket filled with fuzzy dreams, 'cause you wish you were a Muppet, but you can't play the music and you can't light the lights, and it's all you can do just to make it through any more of these lonely nights. So you grab your favorite mixtape and you pop it in the slot, and you scream two words along with all the nerds, 'cause right now it's all you've got.
Stay cool.